I'm Rick Ganley, NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Over the 4th of July week, when most Americans were preoccupied with fireworks and cookouts, the Obama administration released some pretty big news about one of its most important initiatives, the Affordable Care Act. Just before the holiday, on July 2nd, the White House said it was giving businesses an extra year to comply with what's called the employer mandate. That means companies with more than 50 workers will now have until 2015 to cover employees or pay a penalty. Then, just after Independence Day, the administration announced delays on several smaller technical parts of the law. For example, the healthcare marketplaces, called exchanges, are under less pressure to verify the income levels of people asking for subsidies to help purchase insurance. Opponents of the Health Care Act jumped on these announcements, calling them proof that the wheels are coming off the bus. And even some of the law's ardent supporters seemed caught off guard by these new pushed-off deadlines. But White House officials said they were simply responding to concerns about the complexities of compliance and that they agreed that a little more time was a reasonable request. Today in The Exchange, we look at what this healthcare hiatus might mean, not just for businesses, but for the law overall, and what was supposed to be its grand rollout in 2014. Let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests for the hour. Adrian Rupp is here, Vice President at the New Hampshire and Business and Industry Association, New Hampshire's statewide Chamber of Commerce. And Adrian, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Steve Gerlach, a tax attorney at Bernstein Schur. He represents employers in matters of the Affordable Care Act. And Steve, good to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us from the D.C. area, Brett Norman, health policy reporter for Politico. He's been covering these developments all along the way. And Brett, thank you also for giving us the hour this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, and Brett, before we talk about what happened over the 4th of July week, and there were some pretty big announcements, remind us of what was supposed to be happening. What big pieces of the Affordable Care Act were supposed to be in place by that looming 2014 deadline, a mere 5 months away, Brett?
So there are three big pillars of the law. There's the Medicaid expansion. That's the public health insurance for the poor that was supposed to be significantly expanded for lower income folks. There's the exchange, the health insurance exchange, which is a state-based marketplace for mostly for people who don't have insurance now or who buy it through the individual market to. It's supposed to be a competitive place where a lot of plans are offering good insurance according to new regulations and hopefully keeping the cost down. And then third, there was going to be an employer mandate, which was to require employers, as you mentioned, over 50 to insure their workers or pay a penalty.
The pay or play is what they call it, right, Brett?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So how surprised were folks inside the Beltway when these announcements were made just before, as I said, and just after the 4th of July, especially that pay or play employer mandate?
Yeah, you know, we talked to some of their closest allies right outside the administration, people that are helping with enrollment, and a lot of the business groups that have been pushing pretty hard for this, and folks in Congress. Nobody knew this was coming. They felt there was some give in the administration to try to accommodate some of the concerns employers have, but they did not see this wholesale kind of year-long delay coming.
And what was the administration's reasoning for doing this?
They have, they're three. I mean, I think they have logistical problems. It's not easy to verify that, you know, one of the requirements is that employers offer affordable insurance and insurance of a certain caliber in order to get out of the penalty. It's not easy to do that. There are a lot of complaints from industry, especially smaller businesses, worried about the reporting requirements. They have to give all this information to the government, otherwise they wouldn't know whether they they're meeting all the requirements. And third, you know, the political concerns. A lot of there had been a trickle of stories that could very well turn into a much bigger stream of employers trying to adjust their workforce to get out of having to report. So not having 50 employees, not expanding above 50 employees. There was also another requirement that a full-time employee counted for 30 hours, so people were lowering some of their, you know, restaurant servers' hours and things like that. And these are, you know, in this kind of, you know, slow economic recovery, that's not the kind of stories they want out there. Or
yeah.
Real thing to be happening.
And definitely want to ask you in a couple minutes, all of you, and especially you, Brett, about some of the stories that we've heard about employers adjusting their workforces to try to get around some of the requirements of the law. But to our folks in studio as well, and Adrian, what was the conversation among members of the BIA before this deadline was shifted to 2015, when it looked like in just 5 months employers were going to have to do this pay or play?
I think certainly still a lot of questions, a lot of concerns. That's really the one thing, particularly with those employers who are right around the 50 employees mark. I mean, they really had the most decisions to make. A lot of the larger employers, you know, obviously they're not going to cut their workforce by hundreds of employees. And for the most part, a lot of large employers are already offering health coverage, and they will continue to do so. So that wasn't as much of a concern, but I think a lot of it had to do with the reporting requirements, is that now they have to provide all of this extra information, and they need to be able to show that they're offering health qualified health plans that meet these standards, that they're considered affordable to their employees. So I just think the general consensus was just still a lot of angst and uncertainty and questions about, what am I going to do? Am I going to be doing this correctly? Am I going to be in compliance?
Yeah, so they didn't want to be out of compliance and felt like they needed a little more time to figure that
right,
out.
Right, exactly.
So how do your members feel about the change now to 2015, a whole more year?
Well, I would say it's certainly taken some of the pressure off. I think that they feel a little more at ease knowing that they've got an additional year to try and figure things out, and that also that the Obama administration, the Treasury Department, is willing to work with employers and try to simplify things and make things easier and you know, look at the forms and things of that nature.
Yeah, and Steve Gerlach, you're advising all kinds of companies, as I understand. And what are some of the different needs and concerns that your clients have had about this, depending on what type of company they are?
Sure. And we've worked with any number of employers, including for-profit employers, nonprofit, quasi-governmental entities. It really covers, the mandate itself covers all employers with 50 or more employees. It's not just private businesses. The concerns really fall into two large buckets, the first one being the compliance concerns that Adrian was speaking about, and the second one being cost concerns. For some employers, the cost concerns are going to be minimal. They're still going to have to put in place the compliance infrastructure that they need. But for other employers, the costs are going to be considerable, and they're going to have to make some business decisions around those costs.
Wow. Give us some examples there, Steve.
Well, sure. There are a number of different industries that have large groups of employees that they may be variable hours, or they may be seasonal, or they may be a number of what they've historically considered part-time or per diem, folks who may qualify for coverage or an offer of coverage under the Act that historically these folks haven't been covered. And there's a potential being between the devil and the deep blue sea, if you will, for an employer, because they either have to offer these folks coverage and assume the costs of doing so, or pay a penalty on the other hand.
Yeah, and as you talk about the costs and some of the decisions that employers are going to have to make, are you hearing, Steve, from your clients stories about, I'm not going to hire beyond that fabled 49th employee?
Well, you hear it. Yes, absolutely. But in reality, employers will sit down and they'll make a good business decision about this, or this is what we encourage folks to do. And certainly the pay or play rules are part of that decision, but they're not the only consideration. Whether or not to expand your workforce depends on the demand for your services or your products. It depends on the competitiveness of, in your industry and so on and so forth. A lot of other considerations, and this is only part of the picture.
The number for you to join our conversation on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. We want your questions, comments, concerns about some of the recent announcements concerning the Affordable Care Act, especially now that employers have an extra year to conform to the mandate to cover employees. Those are employers who have more than 50 workers. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Adrian, I did want to ask you, too, are you hearing from some of your members at the BIA about that 49th employee? They don't want to go beyond that because then the mandate kicks in.
Sure. I mean, I think you hear comments, but I think Steve made a really good point that that's not the only consideration of employers. And ultimately, employers are looking to serve their customers, and they certainly need good employees, and they want to attract good employees. So there's a lot that goes into making those decisions. And if they do want to grow their businesses, they're going to have to make those types of hiring decisions. So I think it's like Steve said, it's certainly a factor, and it might put businesses in the position of maybe delaying hiring. I think when you're looking at everything in terms of the economic recovery, and you could have businesses who decide, okay, maybe I will delay it. But in the long term, I mean, businesses have to make smart business decisions, and they're going to need to evaluate their workforce and make sure that they have the people that they need to produce their products, produce their services. So,
yeah. All right. Well, and Brett, I want to ask you what you might be hearing nationally after a short break. Again, we invite your questions or comments. If you're an employer, how do you feel about this recent announcement that you got another year to abide by the Affordable Care Act's coverage mandates? And overall, how do you feel about the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, supposed to be in place in 2014? Now some pieces are being delayed. We want your questions, comments, thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is offering you a reprieve from those summer gas prices. The early bird prize for NHPR Summer Car Raffle is $2,000 in gas gift cards donated by Irving Oil that could last you up to a year. Tickets are $50 each or three for $100. Pick yours up at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, in Dana-Farber, New Hampshire Oncology, Hematology, and Londonderry, offering consultations with disease specialists from Dana-Farber in Boston, danafarber.org/Londonderry. From the 80th Annual League of New Hampshire Craftsman's Fair, August 3rd through the 11th at Mount Sunapee Resort in Newbury, information online at nhcrafts.org. And Monadnock Music presenting soprano Barbara Quintiliani on the Saturday, July 20th at 7:30 p.m., Peterborough Townhouse. Tickets and information at monadnockmusic.org. 920, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a hiatus for parts of the health care law. Earlier this month, the Obama administration announced that certain provisions of the Affordable Care Act would be delayed, including that large employers now have an extra year to conform to the mandate to cover employees. We're talking with some experts this hour about how this change might affect New Hampshire and what it might mean more broadly for the law that many call Obamacare. We want to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. If you're an employer, how is this affecting the decisions that you'll make? If you're someone who is seeking health coverage, what are your hopes for the rollout of this law, the grand rollout in 2014? The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests. Adrian Rupp is here, Vice President of the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. Also, Steve Gerlach, a tax attorney at Bernstein Schur. He represents employers in matters of the Affordable Care Act. And Brett Norman joins us from the D.C. area. He's health policy reporter for Politico. And before we go to the phones, Brett, I did want to get your thoughts, too, on, you know, some of the stories that we're hearing about employers possibly not hiring that 50th employee, employers possibly cutting back full-time folks to part-time so that the requirements of the Affordable Care Act won't kick in. What are you hearing nationally, Brett?
I think the one thing to keep in mind is that an overwhelming majority of the larger employers, something like 95% of businesses over 100 people and a pretty large percentage over 50, already offer insurance without having any requirements from the government. It's just a demand of the labor market. They do it to compete for workers and to keep them happy, attract them, retain them, and to keep them healthy. Also, the people that are really affected, that were going to be hit, were places that had large part-time workforces, like the retail industry, hospitality industry, restaurants, that, as Steve was saying, typically employ part-time folks. But they may work over 30 hours a week. And so it was not a great thing when the administration said, hey, now we say full-time is over 30 hours a week. You know, this could really kind of be a huge addition to your labor costs if you, all of a sudden you have to provide this large workforce with health benefits that you never had before. So it's that slice of the economy that's definitely most impacted.
Yeah, because again, as you say, a lot of Americans are getting insurance through their employers, and it's fine. There were some stories, though, right, Brett, about, for example, the company that owns Olive Garden got into trouble for saying that it might cut back on hours so that it wouldn't have to provide coverage. And then Cumberland Farms got sort of positive press for saying it might boost people's hours so that it could provide coverage. Give us some of the stories and legends that are floating around there.
Yeah, so Darden Restaurants, which owns Olive Garden and Red Lobster and some other folks, this was last fall, maybe even. Yeah, they were early on this, said that they were going to reduce their workers' hours to less than 30, so they wouldn't be subject to this rule. And there was pushback from their clients, I mean their customers, and they backed off on that pretty quickly. You also saw Papa John's Pizza, you know, popular pizza, was, you know, had floated the idea of having a Obamacare surcharge on each pizza order. That didn't go over too well, and they backed off that. Other employers, like I say, like Cumberland Farms, are actually moving. Maybe they had wanted to offer, you know, health insurance even before the Affordable Care Act passed or not, but you know, for whatever reason, are taking the opportunity to go ahead and expand it. And like we were talking about, it can be a very attractive thing to potential employees.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve Gerlach.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on this, on the question of cutting back hours. You had mentioned the Olive Garden folks, and bringing back in that question of a business decision about that. I happen to have worked in the restaurant industry before going to law school, and one of the important pieces of employee motivation in the restaurant industry is if you're doing good work, we're going to give you more hours and we're going to give you better shifts. And so bringing then this unilateral decision to say we're not going to reward our employees any longer with more hours is kind of an unanticipated side effect of limiting folks to 28 hours a week, that kind of thing. Employers really need to bring in the whole picture and not make a knee-jerk reaction against the act, but make good business decisions around it.
And yet, Steve, and I'm sure you know this, health coverage is expensive. I mean, places like Olive Garden or Papa John's or whatever may really want to provide coverage, but it is really, really expensive. So they may be thinking, look, government, bring down the cost first so that I can afford this.
Yeah, and that's a difficult thing to do, and I actually agree with that criticism of the act. Looking at the Massachusetts experience, they've more or less achieved their goals of universal coverage, but they have not been able to bring the cost down.
Let's see what our listeners think, and then we'll talk some more. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. As we talk about the rollout of the Affordable Care Act and how pieces of it are now being delayed, what do you make of this? Are you confused? Are you relieved? If you're an employer, is this welcome or not? What are your comments, concerns? Also, if you're a worker hoping for coverage, what do you think about this? The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Waiting in Nashua is John. Hi, John. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. Go ahead.
I was calling. I'm a normal human being who is covered by my employer, and I just wanted to ask about the need for the employer mandate these days, since you know we do have the individual mandate, and I know that that's our standard, the way that insurance works in the United States, but you know it's not the way that it has to work, that it works elsewhere. I don't know why it's the way it necessarily has to work here. I was wondering if your guests could comment on why we're, I guess, keeping that model in place by requiring it for employers who have over 50 employees.
Yeah, that's a big question, isn't it? Adrian, your thoughts, and maybe you too, Brad. I mean, why do we have this workplace-based health coverage in this country? It's a historical question, isn't it? I mean,
sure, it is. And I think in large part it might have something to do with inertia. It's just what we've always done since going way back, employers began offering this health benefit. And
post-World War II, right?
Yes.
Instead of raising wages.
It was an opportunity to further compensate employees without raising wages. So they began offering health coverage. And so it's just something that's become, I think, so ingrained in employee and employer culture that in some part it might be difficult to make that shift. But having said that, there's obviously talk about should we be rethinking things? And I know that there are people out there who do believe that maybe we should be looking at ways to shift health coverage away from employer-based coverage and be looking at it more as individuals going out and finding health coverage and purchasing it the way you would do auto insurance or life insurance or anything else.
And that was partly what the exchanges were supposed to be about. For those folks who didn't have coverage through their employer, they were supposed to be able to competitively shop around on these health exchanges. Here in New Hampshire, hasn't been that competitive yet. I wonder what you think, Brett, of John's question. And thank you, John, for the call. At the beginning of this healthcare debate, right, there was some talk about, you know, forget this employer-based system. Let's go to a public option. But that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it didn't.
Going back in history here, Brett, a little bit. But
right.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to pass. That's for sure. There were a lot of enthusiastic liberal support for that. I think there are two parts to the question that your caller asked. And, I mean, one, and maybe the biggest, is that right now health insurance from employers is tax-favored. It's one of the biggest tax breaks in the code next to the mortgage deduction. So it's actually a cost-effective way. I mean, even though it's very expensive, it's still employers can offer employees value, without having to pay without anybody having to pay the full tax load on it. And then more immediately, I mean, the reason for the employer mandate, given the system we have, is just to keep, to at least maintain that piece of the status quo. The majority of working Americans are covered by their employers. And if they all went to the exchanges, that would be basically the same. I mean, it wouldn't be the same as a public option, but they would be provided subsidies. It would get very, very expensive. So, I mean, it's a cost control thing in this context.
Well, and John, it's a great question. So thank you for joining us. The number here in the exchange again, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like. Keep it short. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And up next from Lebanon is Ken. Hi, Ken. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The cost of health insurance plans, you touched upon it a second ago, is entirely deductible to businesses. Is that the case at all for individuals? Will it be tax deductible as a medical expense entirely as it is for businesses?
Yeah, because that's a good benefit, isn't it, Ken, for businesses? Even though it's expensive, at least they can deduct it, right?
Well, and if the cost of these health insurance plans on some of these businesses are going to be transferred to individuals, is that deductibility going to be there for individuals as well?
Okay, Steve Gerlach, I'm going to throw that to you. Thank you, Ken, for calling in.
Sure. The intent, it's not clear what's going to happen going forward, but currently the situation is that an individual may deduct medical expenses, but there's a cap on that. They must exceed 7.5%.
It has to be a lot before you can deduct.
It has to be a lot, exactly.
So if we're going to have this shift, and not entirely, but if more people are going to be out there buying their own coverage, will they be able to get more of a tax benefit like the companies have, Steve? What do you think?
I'm not aware that that's being contemplated. And I think an important piece of that is what Brett said, which is that we've got this employer-based system already in place. Not a lot of folks, I mean, there's going to be some tweaking around the edges, I think, of the workforce, but most folks are going to stay with their employers, probably.
Yeah.
So the exchanges are going to get folks that aren't otherwise covered.
All right. And thanks for that call, Ken. We've got some great emails, too, that I want to share with both of you. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And here's an email from Olenka, who says, what is the fee employers have to pay? I've heard an unconfirmed report that my husband's employer spends about $25,000 annually per employee on health care, but that the penalty fee for not covering workers would only be what this person calls a wrist slap, about $2,000 per employee. Is there any truth to this? How much is the government going to penalize corporations, really? Brett, can you answer that? That, you know, it costs a lot to cover someone, but not that much to not cover them.
Yeah, it's I think it's between $7,000 and $8,000, according to the Kaiser family survey, to cover an individual for a year with typical employer plan, and it's something more like $14,000 or $15,000 to cover a family. And you know, your emailer is exactly right. It's a $2,000 penalty if you are a large employer and don't provide insurance to your employees. So there's a huge gap there. Part of it is that people hate to pay something for nothing. So it also works the same way with the individual mandate. Next year, it's only a $95 penalty, whereas buying insurance would cost far, far more. And so they're banking on the drive from employers and regular individuals to not want to give the government money when they can take that money and put it towards something that that would benefit them, which is health insurance.
Although the pots of money we're talking about are pretty different in size, Brad. I mean, $95 versus, you know, who knows how much to cover yourself individually. $2,000 versus, as you said, $7,000 to cover yourself through a business.
It is, and it does crank up over the next few years. It gets up to about $700, yeah, for the individual. But
uh-huh.
even then, that's definitely less than, you know, what what it would typically cost by a health plan, a lot less. And it's been one of the criticisms. There are plenty of people who say that the individual mandate won't be that effective, because if you just do kind of brass tacks economic analysis, you know, it doesn't pay in a straight up, you know, it's cheaper to pay the penalty than buy insurance. But in Massachusetts, we have seen, you know, the same kind of thing is true. And generally speaking, people have opted to pay for the insurance.
Yeah, both of our studio guests want to hear from you too, Steve and Adrian, this idea that it's cheaper to just pay the penalty.
A couple of points about that, and we want to be sure that we're comparing apples to apples on this. First of all, getting back to the tax deduction notion, an employer's contribution to an employee's health coverage is deductible, but an employer's payment of a penalty is not tax deductible. So
it's important to keep that in mind.
Keep that in mind. The numbers still come out, if you're just looking at costs, the numbers still come out in favor of paying the penalty, but it's less of an advantage than is commonly noted. The other piece of it is, obviously, there are other forces at work here. There's the labor market at work telling us if we don't offer health coverage as an employer, we may not be able to attract the kind of people that we need to work for us.
Well, and that's the thing, too, Adrian, that I wanted to ask you. I mean, Brett's right. It's, you know, it's more than just a numbers calculation. There's also, you know, what kind of people you want to attract, public relations and so forth.
Absolutely. And I think that's really a key point. Employers have to look at their competitiveness, and they always have to be looking at that with employee recruitment and retention. And certainly, I would say health insurance is still the most valued non-monetary benefit that employees have, particularly when they're offering family coverage as well, because you could have employers that offer coverage just for the individual. But, you know, most of us have families, loved ones, children. So I still think that's a very valuable benefit, and employers would have to weigh the cost benefit to simply eliminating coverage or not.
Cost benefit, again, being more than just numbers on a page.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that call and that email. Here's another email. This is from Eric in Manchester, who says, did businesses not see this coming? I'm wondering why the administration would voluntarily weaken its position so employers could have more time for paperwork. Eric says they've had notice. Why the delay? Seems like we're dragging out the painful parts of the law. Eric says, just tear off the Band-Aid and get it going. Eric, thanks for the email. Brett, what do you think?
There are definitely some supporters of the law and the Hill and outside who did want this to go ahead and be put in place in whatever kind of kludgy way they could manage. You know, the idea being that if it is in effect and you know, the sky doesn't fall and the economy doesn't collapse, they would be able to kind of get beyond it. The politics of it are kind of weird because now it's been delayed until 2015, so this is going to remain a big unknown question heading into the 2014 midterms. And Mitch McConnell's, you know, made clear they're gonna make a big deal out of it. You know, politically, it cuts both ways, I feel like. But yeah, they really were going to have a very hard time logistically getting
with the 2014.
Yeah, and same with employers. It was a huge lift. They've got other really important provisions they decided they needed to focus on instead.
Steve, go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I just want to add a bit of a historical perspective to this. It is very common in the rollout of major laws, especially major tax laws, to have a year delay or
really?
Even 2 years delay. It's not unusual at all. And in fact, in my practice, I've seen it where the IRS or other agency will wait until the December before the January deadline to announce the delay. So folks are scurrying about trying to get things going, and then they hear about the delay.
Little Christmas present there.
Exactly. Right. So we had a little bit more heads up this time.
Okay. Thanks for that email, Eric. And you can email us too, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Reitman Show, politics, policy, and the National Labor Relations Board. Then understanding China's quest for wealth and power in the modern world. All coming up on the Diane Reitman Show.
The Diane Reitman Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Bernstein Schur, a multi-service law firm providing sound advice about labor and employment issues to large and small businesses in Manchester and at bernsteinschur.com. And from Elliott Dermatology, offering medical, surgical, and cosmetic care for issues of the skin, scalp, hair, and nails. Details at elliottdermatology.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our weekly Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Email us your questions, comments, thoughts about the top stories of the week before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we've been talking about a hiatus for the new health care law. Earlier this month, the White House announced that certain provisions of the Affordable Care Act would be delayed, including that large employers now have an extra year to conform to the mandate to cover employees. We've been talking about that and other changes that have come about with this law leading up to its big rollout in 2014. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. 7777. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And all of you, let's go right back to our callers. And Carol's calling in from Grantham. Hi, Carol, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, good morning. In all of this discussion, there's a factor that I have not heard anyone mention, but I think is probably very important in terms of companies being able to acquire health insurance for their employees. I formerly worked with a very large, nationally recognized insurance company that did have health insurance as part of its offerings.
Sure.
And there were whole industries that they simply would not even consider.
Construction, Carol, for example, because it's dangerous?
Yeah, not so much that it was dangerous. I mean, I suspect that that was part of it, but the reason that was given was that there was high turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And that it would be, you know, burdensome bookkeeping. The other one that was particularly notable was restaurants. Just no way they would even consider an application from a restaurant.
So relate that experience, Carol, to sort of what's happening now with the Affordable Care Act.
The question I have is, are these same kinds of businesses, if they were trying to acquire insurance now, could they even get it?
Yeah. Is it even out there? Steve, what do you think?
Sure. And I'm a little bit out of my depth because I'm not a broker. But I have contact and work with a number of brokers, and they're telling me very similar things that the caller has mentioned, which is that some of these populations are going to be difficult to find a carrier to write the policy for because they're transient, because they're because of the high turnover. They view it as too high of a risk.
So I guess, Brett, this is really getting into the details, but broadly, so what do those folks do then? Do they go on the health exchanges and try and shop around for individual coverage there? Is that the idea?
It's an option. There's going to be a lot of overlap with the really transient population. The super part-time people tend to be lower income, tend to work for employers that don't offer health insurance now, and those are some of the folks who would go to the exchanges and potentially have subsidies, which could turn them into a more stable customer if their contribution is small enough that they'll do that.
And again, the exchanges are supposed to be competitive, so hopefully that affects price. But also, as you said, Brett, the government has promised to offer subsidies to lower income folks so that they can afford to purchase insurance on the exchanges. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Anybody up to 400% of poverty, which is about $90,000 for a family of four, a lot less than that, maybe $45,000 for an individual, get some subsidies. And it actually could be, some of the early models, looks like it would be pretty affordable for people at least who are making less than, say, $25,000. Their contribution would not be undoable.
Yeah, and Brett, I have to ask you this since you're outside New Hampshire. What do you make of the fact that I think we're the only state where only one insurer so far is playing on that marketplace?
Well, Laura, that is not how, that's not what the designers were intending, that's for sure. The idea was to have everybody on the same playing field, kind of offering insurance that met the same requirements, and then competing for customers, you know, on price and quality. And the reality is, in some markets, like New Hampshire, that it's incredibly expensive to find that network of providers to come into a market that you haven't been in before. And there are a lot of questions about how well the exchange is going to work. And so this first year, I don't think the competition is going to be quite as much as they would have preferred. I think when the market stabilizes, there may then be more of incentive for other insurers to come in, to get into the game.
Yeah. Adrian, do you want to jump in there?
Sure. I think to some extent it's not surprising in a state like New Hampshire. We are a small state. We don't have a lot of insurers. We have I think, four carriers, one of whom has a large percentage of the market share, particularly in the individual market. So I think, too, whereas this is the first year on the exchange, to just have one carrier competing, I certainly not ideal, but I don't think it's as surprising as, say, a state like California, who has lots of insurance carriers and I think has 13 who are going to be competing. So obviously the hope going forward is that in future years there will be carriers willing to play in this space. And certainly the current carriers have indicated that they are still going to be looking into this and would like to be offering plans in the future. So it's just not going to be there for the first year.
For year one. Mm-hmm. So it is important to say, so far, only mm-hmm. one carrier. That's not, you know, definitive and,
right.
and for the end. Still, Steve, I got to imagine that it's disappointing for supporters of this law, especially, again, here in New Hampshire. You know, the marketplaces aren't working out the way that they were supposed to. Medicaid expansion is still uncertain in New Hampshire. So a couple of the ways that this law envisioned people getting coverage aren't quite getting into place as quickly as its supporters had hoped.
Yeah, that's true, both on the employer side and then at least...
And now you have this employer delay. Yeah.
Right. So we have the employer delay. And then we have this one volunteer for the exchange in New Hampshire. I happen to agree with Adrian on this, though. It's taking the long view is probably the better approach. I mean, if you look at Massachusetts, for example, they now have nine companies offering on their exchange. So I think it's a matter of time on that. The individual market is expected to expand as a result of the exchanges, and that will drive insurers to the exchanges.
All right, let's take another call if we could. Rick's waiting in New London. Hi, Rick. You're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for calling the exchange.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So I guess I'm just wondering, you hear a lot about how lawmakers and it seems like they keep trying to push this off. Like, obviously, Republicans do not want this to go into effect. That's just my take on it. Is there any chance that we could push this out far enough past the midterm elections to the next presidential election, get a Republican in office, and possibly have a Republican Senate and Congress? Who knows what can happen in the future? But is there any chance that they could push this out to the point where they can then repeal it?
Yeah. Okay. That's a great question. And Brett, you're our reporter there in Washington. What do you think? I'm sure you've been talking to people about this.
Yeah. Well, just yesterday, the House voted to delay the individual mandate in addition to the employer mandate. And most people think that would have, including all the insurers, think that would have a really bad impact in terms of getting a number of people to enroll next year. But that's not going, I mean, the individual man, this law is not going, the bill is not going anywhere, excuse me. The administration is very committed to having these exchanges open on October 1st, and it would take a real political tsunami to stop that from happening. It doesn't mean they're going to be, it's going to be a seamless opening, but they have said over and over and over again that they will be ready for business and open October 1st. And I think in part, in part it's the law. They really want to see it happen. They want to get it going. And in part, they know the danger, I think, of waiting for future elections. Once this is in place, it's very likely to stay there. If it is delayed, then it's vulnerable, but they basically have it within their power to make it happen, and I'm pretty sure that's what they're going to do.
Well, I wanted to ask you, just following up on what Rick said, and Rick, thanks for the call. After this announcement that large employers will have another year to comply with the coverage requirement, opponents of the Affordable Care Act said, hey, wait a minute, it's not fair to give businesses another year to figure it out when individuals only have, you know, until 2014, not that far away. And you mentioned that you've heard people make that argument as well. Is that a reasonable argument, Brett? Or are we talking apples to oranges here, individual versus business?
Well, it's a good populist argument. You don't want to give favors to big businesses that you can't extend to individuals. At the same time, it really is a very very different thing. There's an idea that The individual mandate is much more central to the law than the employer mandate. In fact, people think delaying the employer mandate is going to have essentially a very marginal effect on you know, how many people have insurance next year. Repealing or pulling back the individual mandate, on the other hand, you would find insurers revolting because they would be getting all of the unhealthy people when they get sick, as opposed to this broader pool of people that is what makes insurance possible. And it really would have the potential to unravel the whole, you know, the whole law, whereas there aren't nearly the repercussions for delaying the employer mandate for a year.
That's interesting. Okay, and what do you think, Steve Gerlach, too, again, given your study of this, that the individual mandate, as Brett says, is much more important to this law's rollout, to its success, than this delay that we've been talking about in terms of businesses covering workers?
Sure. The burden, that the administrative burden and the amount of decision making that's going on to businesses that are 50 or more full-time employees is really quite high, and I don't think that the burden on individuals matches that, the actual amount of work that they have to do to get there. I don't think the amount for individuals even matches that. That's what this is about to me. It's getting employers up to speed, knowing what they have to do, knowing what their costs are, and getting out in front of it. And with that, the delay will help employers immeasurably. So.
But in terms of the overall impact of this law, Brett is saying the individual mandate is really what it's all hanging on. It's not so much about this employer mandate, partly because a lot of employers cover people already.
Right, right. There's all of those forces that have driven employers to provide insurance historically are still going to be in place this year. I do agree with Brett's earlier comment that the employer mandate is a bit of a backstop for the individual mandate to prevent employers from dumping their employees onto the exchanges and shifting all those costs onto taxpayers.
Yeah. Adrian.
Yeah, I think that's really important that the individual mandate was really about access. I mean, the central tenet of the law was access, making sure that everybody is insured, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to spread the risk enough so that you have healthy people and sick people and that you make it affordable for everybody. And that's really the need to get people insured who may not be insured already, particularly younger people who, as you pointed out, it's probably a lot less expensive for them to just not buy insurance and show up at the emergency room if they have something catastrophic happen.
Yeah. Brett, did you want to jump in there too?
I agree with Adrian.
Here's another email that came in that I will throw at you, Brett, because it's another political question that has come up. It's from Jeremy, and thanks, Jeremy, for the email. He says, does the president have the authority to change a law passed by Congress, signed into law? This came up, Brett, when the administration announced pulling back to 2015, extended to 2015, the employer mandate. And some people said, hey, you can't do that. What do you think? What are some of the conversations you've heard about whether the president can actually do this?
Well, the Republicans are saying he can't, but I think, as Steve mentioned earlier, it really is not that uncommon to make some adjustments that lead to postponement. So they actually are delaying the reporting requirements, which is something that's within the, you know, kind of regulatory scope. They can do that without saying they're necessarily delaying implementing the law itself. This happens especially with complicated tax provisions, and there's an awful lot of precedent. It would be unusual if there was any significant legal interference here.
And what's the next big deadline then, Steve? Brett, you first. What's the next big deadline on this Affordable Care Act?
Well, so October 1st, right?
This year?
Three months. We've got the exchanges have to open. All of the state computer systems that are going to be the back office of these exchanges are going to have to be talking to all of the HHS and the IRS and all of these agencies in Washington, D.C. to kind of sort through all of the complicated bits of information they need to decide who is eligible for what subsidies or who is eligible for Medicaid. And on top of that, they're in a big rush to build the, you know, the front end, what people are actually going to see if they go online to enroll. So that being ready to go on October 1st is certainly the most immediate, biggest deadline in terms of the amount of work that needs to be done and what people are actually going to see.
All right. Well, I can tell that we'll probably be doing at least one or two shows on that as that deadline approaches. October is not that far away. So, Adrian, what are your members at the Business and Industry Association looking at in terms of what's next for them with this?
I think for the most part, it's going to be a lot of what's been going on. They're going to be talking with their brokers and getting a sense of what their health plans are going to look like for the coming year. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly, I've heard that there are certainly some differences between 2013 renewals versus 2014 renewals, given some of the changes in the law and the other types of things. But I think that's really what they're going to be doing and continuing to evaluate what they're offering their employees and what makes the most sense for their business.
And full employment for people like you, Steve, who are advising companies on this.
If I could get one message out today to employers, I would recommend that every employer with 50 or more employees, full-time employees, take this time to gather information about their workforce, look at the law, and do what they need to do to comply with the law and measure the cost impact it's going to have with them. It's going to take time to do this, and I recommend they get started now.
Okay. All of you, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. A special commission begins delving into the details of Medicaid expansion. The Northern Pass Project blankets state households with brochures touting a new route for its controversial hydropower plan. And safety officials issue warnings about dangerous rain-swollen waterways after a record number of drownings already this summer. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from you, our members. Emeritus Village Savings Bank, proud to serve the people, businesses, and communities of central New Hampshire for over 140 years, online at mvsb.com. And from Republic, New Hampshire's original certified local farm-to-table restaurant, breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, Elm Street, Manchester, online at republiccafe.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1,
WEVS Nashua 88.3,
WEVH Hanover 91.3,
WEVN Keene 90.7,
WEVC Gorham 107.1,
WEVJ Jackson 99.5,
WEVF Colebrook 90.3,
and WEVQ Littleton 91.9,
and online at nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. America in the early 1930s was the scene of widespread labor unrest. Several prominent strikes erupted in violence and threatened the struggling economy. Then in 1935, Congress passed the National Labor Relations Act,